Is the light okay for you all? I just kind of put it here and not there, but I can put it back. Doesn't matter. Okay.
It signifies a different way.
I, nine, I, nine, I, 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 welcome to part two, Mastering Presence. So the title, Mastering Presence, implies that there's something to be learned and something to be gained from the study, which is true. But unlike most skills that we learn in order to affect something in the world, like if you learn how to make sushi, for example, it looks simple, but it's very difficult, and you have to practice, and there's lots of details you have to attend to, and then you have a new skill that you didn't have before. But with this, we are learning a new skill, but the essence of this skill is being connected with something that is so obvious that our spontaneous default is to forget it constantly, is to not realize it at all. Because our minds, the way we're wired, tend to focus on things that are changing, that have contrast to them. The thing that's there all the time in the background of everything is the awareness of whatever's going on, and we just tend to take that for granted. So to master presence really means that there is this additional piece that we're training ourselves to do, which is to remember that we are conscious, to remember that this consciousness is actually what we are, and to do the activity of consciousness, meaning be conscious of whatever it is we're perceiving. What we tend to do is we perceive things externally, but we don't really perceive our thoughts and our feelings. We feel as if we are our thoughts and our feelings. This is what I think, and therefore this is how I feel, or that's what I see, and therefore this is what I feel, as opposed to saying there's a thing I see out there and there's a feeling that's happening. They're both equally separate from me in the practice of presence. It's a radical thing. It takes training. It's a skill, but it's not the acquiring of something different, actually. It's more just the remembering of something that we have, really not have, but something that we are, something that we are. Okay. Yeah.
The cognitive therapy model is an event happens, you're the observer, so, and you perceive it, and from that perception, you generate self-talk that creates the emotions. How does that compare to what you're saying?
The way it compares is that before you generate the self-talk, there is the arising of a spontaneous inner verbiage, we can say. Like, in other words, thoughts arise in our mind, and then there's this little move that we do where our consciousness kind of leans into or becomes involved with. It's hard to kind of describe it in words, but we can observe it in ourselves. Like when you see something, something comes up, it might be a feeling or it might just be thoughts. But whatever it is, it has a certain gravity to it, and we start becoming involved with it, and that creates the self-talk. Okay? So what we're doing is we're becoming aware of that moment right before the self-talk, or we're becoming aware at any point during the self-talk. Like, you can do it from wherever you are. It doesn't really matter. The better you get at it, the earlier you can do it. And by it, what I mean is that you become aware, like, oh, there's a thought. And then you can choose, shall I think about this right now? Is there something that my thoughts will be useful, you know, or well, for thinking about?
Which is very much the cognitive therapy model.
Okay, yeah, I'm not an expert in that, but
because
that could be.
It's, you don't have control over this.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
You're the observer, and it's either on or off. You're either observing or not observing.
Right.
And the place where you have a degree of control is how you frame that self-talk.
And that's right.
You do that with practice.
That's right. That's right. Maybe the slight difference, though, is that if we're only talking about how we can frame the self-talk, there's another choice we have, too. That may not be talked about in that model. I'm not sure because I don't know anything about that model, really. But the other choice we have is to not engage in the self-talk at all. Now, it's not to put a value judgment on it, but it's only to say that if the mind is constantly doing self-talk, which is what it normally is for most people, then we never experience reality without that self-talk. That self-talk, you will see on your own if you practice this, if you take this into, you know, hopefully you have some experiences with it in this group. But beyond that, it really takes like a commitment to a practice. I know for myself, I meditated for over 20 years before I actually started to, before I realized the full implication of it, like before I experienced what awakening was all about. And it only happened when I said, okay, wait a minute, what happens if I don't just sit and meditate, which I was already doing for many years, but what happens if I always meditate? Like, what happens if I go through my life and I just stop doing this normal me thinking thing, and instead, just as much as I can, come to this moment with simplicity, as Rashi said, actually, in one of his commentaries. Come to this moment with simplicity. That actually changed everything. So, but I had to kind of discover it on my own because I never got it from any of the teachings. Maybe teachers were telling me that and I just didn't hear it. But that's why I like to say it as forcefully as possible, because it's so hard to get. But that's actually where the transformation comes. However, it's also very unlikely that you can do that without any sitting meditation, because it takes a certain, you're exercising a certain inner muscle, so to speak, to be able to do that. Yeah.
And everyone's challenges with it look different too. Because mine, for example, I don't know that I've had a lot of like little aha moments that have kind of built into this bigger conglomerate piece of understanding.
Sure.
And the tricky part for me is not, it's not necessarily that the meditation is foreign to me as much as being able to apply it under all circumstances.
Yes.
That's the hard part for me, for example.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that, you know, in my experience, that continues to be the case. I'm not saying it's easy for me to apply it in all circumstances. For me, the shift was simply that it was proven to me. Like, it was no longer something I was trying to practice.
It worked.
Like, there was a radical kind of freedom from all of the schmutz that was me at a certain point. All of my emotions, all of my kind of whatever, like all the feelings that tend to be a burden at a certain point lifted. That doesn't mean they went away forever. I have to continuously practice that. Theoretically, there could be a point where it goes forever. I don't have experience of that. For me, it's still a constant practice. But there was, nevertheless, at a certain point, a shift, you know, whereas before it was like some experiences and theoretical, and then it becomes like something that I have to apply, but I know experientially.
You set an intention before you meditate.
Well, yes, absolutely. That's a good segue, actually, into the back into the letters, because when you say set an intention, of course, the concept in Hebrew for that is kavanah. There's a universal kind of kavanah. Kavanah in the universal sense just means that you're connecting with intention in general, however you verbalize that. But then, if we look at each of the Hebrew letters, there's actually specific kavanot that we can connect with. What I'm going to do in this class with you is suggest particular ones. It doesn't mean they're the only ones. As you work with the letters on your own, you may discover other ones. But what we started off talking about yesterday was Aleph as the kavanah, as the intention of deliberately opening yourself to experience whatever happens to be arising for you. Because that's not the default, of course. As long as we're identified with our thoughts and feelings, then our impulse is to, of course, not want to feel that which is unpleasant, and we want to feel things that are pleasant, which is perfectly reasonable. However, on the deepest level of pleasantness only comes when we deliberately go against that instinct and say, hinani, you know, here I am, I'm here to feel whatever it is. And at some point, there might be painful emotions from the past that come up. Maybe not. Maybe it comes up a little. Maybe it comes up just little and little drips. Sometimes it comes all at once. We can't really control it or predict it. But what we can do, similar to your model you were talking about, is we can actually have the kavanah. We can set the intention. So we looked a little bit about in the tradition, in the letter Aleph, we looked at the piece that you read, Molly, about the four that go to Pardes, and the Arizal's commentary on what is the meaning of this. What are they talking about, this pure marble, and you're not supposed to say mayim mayim. He says that the mayim mayim actually represents feeling. It represents emotional experience. And that there's a basic duality. There's bitter and sweet. There's the upper waters and the lower waters, which of course he's getting from Bereshit, when in the creation of the world there's a separation between upper and lower waters. But those are all seen as symbolic of something within our experience, that we have positive and negative experience. And the Aleph is a picture that embodies the unity of those waters. And that's why the other three rabbis were not able to hang with it. They had various symptoms, because they entered into the practice with an egocentric motive, meaning they weren't fully open to what was coming, and so therefore they got themselves into some kind of trouble. Rabbi Akiva entered in peace, and he left in peace, and that's because he embodies this quality of being open. And then I talked about a little story also from Gemara about Rabbi Akiva and his donkey and his... remember that story? So that was a particular... we're kind of like zooming out one level now, because the level of Aleph is entering to presence through the kavanah of being open to joy and sorrow. And then we're saying, okay, but how do we enter the kavanah of being open to joy and sorrow? Well, one way of doing it is by affirming in ourselves that all of the sorrow ultimately has a good purpose. That was the point of that story, the Gamze LaTova story. It doesn't say Gamze LaTova, but that's from another Talmud story, but that's the famous phrase that many people know about. So anyway, I'm going to come to the next piece here.
Okay.
Yes, very cryptic, and I was amazed when I came across the Arizal's interpretation of that, which, by the way, is in Rabbi Yitzchak Ginsburg's book called Aleph Beit, which is an amazing book if you want to go deeper into this in an intellectual way.
What's it called again?
It's just called Aleph Beit, or Aleph Beit. He spells it B-E-I-T.
By who?
Yitzchak Ginsburg. Okay. So just to summarize, we looked at the Rabbi Akiva story as the entering into joy and sorrow through the portal of faith or trust. I'm going to trust it's going to be okay. And that's important. Even if we don't have a storybook context for it, like, oh, you know, because the lion killed the donkey, that's why I didn't, you know, that's why I wasn't killed by the robber. It doesn't have to be like that. It can actually be much more simple than that. And this is actually very true. It's indisputable, really, once you experience it, is that opening up to your own negative feelings will help you. It will have a positive effect. It is actually for the good. And this brings us actually to the next one a little bit, because not only is it for the good in the sense that it will clean out the negative feelings, it will release it from being held in your nervous system, but you will also be gaining the skill of being able to do that through the practice of it. So we have kind of two levels of it. So that brings us a little bit into our next text. So does someone want to read? I think in your version, it's the first one. It says Bereishit 2:7. Someone want to read that?
Yeah,
I think. Yeah, on Aleph. Yeah, we're back to Aleph. Yeah. You got it? Want to read it out, Molly?
Yeah, sure. Divine being formed the human from the dust of the earth and blew into the human's nostrils the breath of life, and human became a living being.
Nice. Does anybody want to take a shot at reading the Hebrew, just so we can have the sound of it in our ears? Even if you don't know the Hebrew, it's nice to hear it. Yeah? Great.
Vayitzer Adonai Elohim et ha'adam afar min ha'adama vayipach ve'apav nishmat chayim vayihi ha'adam le'nefesh chaya.
Nice, a nefesh chaya. So there's a few different levels of Aleph in here, right? The name of human is what? Adam. And Adam, of course, begins with Aleph. And the Adam is called Adam because why?
Because it's red.
Yeah, because the earth, because in the story, the Adam is made out of the Adama, the red earth, right? So the earth is the Aleph, the person is the Aleph, the clay, red, what's that?
Yeah, red clay rich soil.
That's red clay rich soil, right.
Geological area.
Right, like Sedona too.
And parts of Georgia.
Uh-huh, nice. Okay, so it also makes reference to dust here, which is called afar, which is not with an aleph, that's actually with an ayin. But the human being is formed from a combination between the adama, also called afar, which is dust, and the what? What is coming into the earth to make it into a living being? Yeah, the breath, right, the nishmat, is it called nishmat chaim or nishmat chaim, yes. So the divine breathes the nishmat chaim. So again, we have a picture of this duality, the upper waters and the lower waters, here pictured as the nishmat chaim, which is like shemayim, the upper world, the upper waters. The divine breath, and of course, which is a component of ourselves, in the form of our own awareness. Okay, so this, it's not just a myth, but it's something we can feel right now in the sense that the Adama, or the dust, is our earthly physical body, and the Nishmat Chaim is this mysterious thing that inhabits our body, this thing called consciousness, but it's also not limited to our body, as we pointed out and observed yesterday, that everything we perceive is actually part of this one field of consciousness. Right. So, in this sense, the entry point into opening to joy and sorrow is not only because it will be good for us to do that, but because ultimately it's what we are. If we really acknowledge the fact of our earthliness, that is the fact of our physical bodies, which as Pirkei Avot says, is going to a place of afar, the same word, and worms and maggots, then, you know, inevitably we have to come to grips with the fact that that involves sorrow, that involves, that's not a nice feeling to know that that's where we're going. And yet we also have this, we are also not just the physical body, we are this awareness within which we can perceive the physical body. And that's the Aleph, is really the unity of the two. Okay? All right, shall we dive into the last piece here? Someone else want to read the Pirkei Avot 6:3? Oh, hi.
Okay. Then Zoma said, who is wise? One who learns.
Oh, actually, the one before that. We're going to get to that one, but there's one before that. It says
6:3.
Oh, is that not 6:3?
Oh,
they're both
6:3.
Oh, that's a mistake. Thank you. I did a typo again. Hold on. Let me fix it. I'll send you a corrected version. The that Ben Zoma one is actually 4:1. Okay, let's go back to the first 6:3.
Okay.
Sorry about
one
that.
One who learns from their fellow one chapter, or one halakha, or one verse, or one word, or even one letter, is obligated to treat them with honor. For so we find with David, king of Israel, who learned from
However you want to say it. It's a hard word. Ahitophel.
Ahitophel. No more than two things. It called him his master, his God, and his beloved friend, as it is said. But it was you, a man mine equal, my guide and my beloved friend.
So before you go on, just that word for guide and my guide, that's the connection with Aleph, because guide is alufo, is his guide, and alufi is my God. Guide, I'm sorry. So as we had learned back yesterday about the different meanings of Aleph, this is one of the meanings of this word. So, okay, you can keep going.
David, king of Israel, who learned from
Ahitophel,
more than two things, nevertheless, called him his master, his guide, and his his beloved friend. Then in the case of one who learns from their fellow one chapter, what does that mean? It's an odd translation.
Yes. What does what part mean?
Fellow one
chapter. If one learns from their fellow one chapter.
Yeah, it's a little bit.
Oh, there's a
you
lot
have to pause
comma.
A little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. From their fellow, comma.
Yeah.
One chapter.
Yeah.
Or one halakha, or one verse, or one word, or even one letter. All the more so they are under obligation to treat them with honor. And honor means nothing but Torah. As it is said, it is honor that sages inherit, and the perfect shall inherit good, and the good means nothing but Torah. As it is said, for I give you good instruction, do not forsake my Torah.
Okay, so it's a little bit complex, right? It's a long passage, but really it's, if we kind of condense it and see what it's saying, is it's equating these things. Torah equals goodness, equals learning, equals honor. They're all like equated as the highest value of what it means to be a human being. And it's also expanded beyond, in the context of rabbinic teaching, which is all about learning Torah, it's saying, no, it's not just about like sitting in the yeshiva and learning from your master, but look at King David. He only learned two things from this guy, and he called him my Aleph, essentially. So the Aleph, in this sense, is like some kind of a reality that is enwisening us in some way, that we're here to learn from. So, and of course, we can learn. There's rarely a person that we can't learn something from. So this is expanded even more in the next Mishnah, which I incorrectly labeled, but it's actually chapter 4, Mishnah number 1, and it's the very beginning of that Mishnah. So, yeah, Pirkei Avot. So, Arlene, do you want to just read that next one?
Okay. Ben Zoma said, "Who is wise? One who learns from everyone. As it is said, from all my teachers, I grew wise."
Nice. So now, it's not just saying, if you happen to learn even one thing from someone, it's actually saying, it's your choice. You can learn from everyone. There's not a person that you can't learn from. And we might expand that even out a little more and say we can actually learn from every situation, right? So, yes?
Well, that's where I've been practicing taking it further and treating people and situations with kindness, too.
Yeah.
With that chesed of saying, I am able to learn from you, and therefore I can treat you with kavod.
Right.
Even if, like, this situation is ultimately harmful, or this person is ultimately not the best person in the world, not necessarily making, like, you don't have to make the reparations for that situation fully, as much as you can treat it kindly, and kind of the way we're yielding to pain, kind of let those things exist.
Yeah, and I mean, and it's really a radical teaching, because really what it's saying, if we combine it, if we understand that the Aleph, the paradigm of Aleph, is to open to pain just as much as we're opening to joy, and then we're dealing with a person in front of us who's giving us pain, in a sense, for whatever reason, you know, because they're insulting, because they have an opinion that's different from ours, because they're embodying something that we think is a horrible thing, right? I mean, this is just especially poignant today, I think, in today's atmosphere, we have so much polarization. And that polarization leads to the opposite of honor, right? And here it's saying, actually, no, honor the person who teaches you something. And guess what? The purpose of pain is to teach you something. That's the intention to learn how to be with the pain, which means to learn who you really are, which is this field of awareness that can be with whatever arises. That learning can only happen in the presence of pain. If there was no emotional pain coming to you ever, you would never have that opportunity to have that maturity. So here we have like this connection in integral theory. I don't know if anyone's familiar with integral theory, but they call this pre-trans and post-trans. The pre-trans means before we are fully adult human beings, before we have all this cognitive ability and we know all the tsuris of the world, go back to childhood, go back even more till you're an infant in the womb, you have this very simple, vibrant, blissful peace. To get that back, of course, we don't want to strip away the layers of our brain and make ourselves into fetuses again. We want to be able to do it as functioning adults. So that's the post-trans, okay? That's the, we're transcending, in other words, we're transcending all of the suffering-producing apparatus of our nervous system by going beyond it as opposed to going before it. And we can only do that by practicing, and we practice by being in the presence of discomfort, ultimately. So to summarize, we just went through three different ways in to this practice of being with the waters of joy and the waters of bitterness. The first one was understanding that it's good for us to do it, because by feeling negativity, we actually release it. We burn it up. It doesn't get lodged in our nervous system and become a blockage. So that's a good thing that we can do for ourselves. That's number one. Number two, it is our nature that it's inescapable. We are constructed in such a, we are Adam, composed of the Adama, the Afar, the earthly body, which inevitably has suffering to it, plus the consciousness, which has no form, which has no substance or content to it. It's just this miracle of perception. We're the unity of those two things. And so to embrace and be in alignment with what we really are, then we have to practice this Aleph, right? And the third one is to have the motivation of how the Mishnah equated it, goodness, honor, learning, Torah. Those are all four of those are different dimensions of the same thing, which is that we're here in this body to grow, to learn, and we can only do that through confronting the waters of joy and the waters of bitterness, and to be and to forge ourselves into a oneness that is able to be in the presence of all of that. So that's the Aleph practice. So what I'd like to do now, unless anyone has any questions or comments about that, is to do a little bit of the practice of Aleph. Are we ready to do that? Okay. So first, before we get into the actual practice, let's learn the singing of it. We were singing the melody before, and we have this invocation verse, which is also on that same sheet. So if you need to look at the words, it should be there on the Aleph sheet, either the PDF or in the email. I pasted it also. And it's from Psalm 145, the first verse. So it says like this.
Aromimcha Elohai
If you can take the attitude of opening yourself to whatever feelings arise and whatever flavor those feelings are. Feelings might arise spontaneously just by taking that attitude. They might come from the past, they might come from life situations. And I just want to say that as we meditate now and at any point, sometimes what happens is thoughts might occur to you during meditation that you don't want to throw away. You don't want to miss them. They might be important because insights emerge from the nervous system. They tend to happen when we make the space for them to happen. If we're rushing around all the time, those insights might not occur. So I just want to give you permission. If something occurs to you that's important, to just take a moment and write it down so that you can refer to it later, and then let it go, and then come back to the practice.
All the time when I do Tai Chi, I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that might happen. Okay. So taking the kavana of opening to feelings as they are and just having that sense inwardly of surrender to how to the notion that, that what is. Whatever is, that's how it is. And there's an inner relaxing, an inner accepting, a coming into alignment with however this moment appears, moment by moment. And we'll sing the first half of the line, Aromimcha Elohai HaMelech. See if you can put this kavanah into that first half of the line, surrendering to what is, opening yourself to the full spectrum of whatever arises, knowing that you can be the oneness, you can be the open space to be in the presence of anything. And we'll put that into the words as we sing. Sing those words, HaMelech, there can be a sense of that metaphor of king, which is what it means, is really a kind of surrender. That we're making truth king. We're making reality king. Let's sing it again. Going to expand this kavana a little bit to recognize that to be empowered, to be able to do this surrender, that this tremendous freedom that it gives us to be with what is, to be able to be in a state of non-resistance, to realize our deepest nature is actually an incredibly precious gift. To receive this teaching that comes to us from the tradition and in our own physiology, to be able to do this practice and to feel that gratitude for that. So this is a Baruch Hashem Kavanah. See if you can put that sense of gratitude into the second half of the line. We're going to sing, Va'avarcha Shimcha Le'olam Va'ed. I will bless your name forever and ever. It's an expression of gratitude. Here we go. Va'avarcha Shimcha Again, bringing forth sense of gratitude for the teaching, for connecting with your own deepest nature, for your own with your own spiritual potential, the ability to practice and to learn. Va'avarcha. Va'avarcha Shimcha Coming back to that state of surrender, opening to what is Aromimcha.
Aromimcha.
Gratitude for the teaching and the practice.
Va'avarcha
Continue to chant this verse. See if you can alternate the two kava notes with the first half and the second half, surrender and then gratitude. At some point, if you feel that you're becoming kavana fatigued in a sense, focusing on those things, just let go of the kavana completely and let your awareness just rest in the sound and vibration of the words without focusing on the meaning at all. And see if you can just fall into presence with the words. There's no special rule about when to do that. It might be right away. It might not happen at all. But just be conscious of those kava notes and also of the invitation to let go of them when you want to let go of them. If you're able, see if you can see the image of the Aleph in your chest. Becoming conscious of your breathing, that each out-breath there's a sense of surrender to what is, openness to feel, and within breath, gratitude for the ability to tap into this and to know this. And bringing right hand to your heart. Taking the kavanah of offering awareness to the fullness of what arises in the spirit of the Aleph, willing to feel whatever arises. Maybe the noise outside gives us opportunity to practice that a little bit. offering awareness fully with the word lecha, or lach if you like. Deep breath in. Lecha. And bringing left hand down to your belly, feeling awareness down into your organs. Filling your belly and your lower back, flowing downward all the way down through your legs to your feet and toes. Feeling awareness upward from your belly back into your heart and lungs, upper back, chest, shoulders, and neck, relaxing any excess tension, but just enough tension to be alert in the chair. Awareness flowing down the arms to the hands and fingers back into your belly and heart, making that connection. Feeling upward through your neck, into your face, into your skull, into your brain, into your nervous system, flowing back down through your spine, branching out to all the systems of the body, bringing a little smile to your lips to express this generosity, this willingness of being present with. And feeling the flow of your breathing. And anchoring this body awareness with Na'ase. Nice deep breath in. Na'ase. Bringing right hand to your forehead, lightly touching your forehead with your right hand fingers, left hand on belly, right hand touching forehead. Becoming aware of the space around you, the space of the room, and bringing to mind that the awareness within the body and the awareness without the body is one unbroken field. That our sense of the difference between inside our body and outside our body is not a difference in the awareness field itself. But the awareness itself is simply one unbroken, boundless, shapeless, borderless field that takes the shape of whatever we're perceiving. And so whatever we perceive is also made out of the substance of awareness within our experience of it. And so by opening fully to the full spectrum, the light and the dark, Yotzer Or Uvarei Choshech, the pleasant and the unpleasant, we know ourselves as this vast open field of awareness. Venishma, and long out breath, deep breath in. Venishma. Kissing your fingers, relaxing your hands. We're going to chant the prayer phrase, Atahu, Atahu. In this simple meaning, it's like you are it, you are the divine. You can also do, if you choose, a version that combines the feminine pronoun, Atya, and then Hu. That's how I'll be doing it. So Atahu is the traditional Atyahu. Really the important part isn't which one, but just bringing the awareness to the vibration of the sounds. Atyahu, Atahu. Yeah. can, if you feel comfortable, you can move your body gently, swaying back and forth to the rhythm of the chant. When you move your body, it's helpful to, giving the body movement can be helpful when we come into this stillness for the body being comfortable to be still. So feel free if you like, swaying back and forth. Atya. Taking the chant inward, letting the mind continue to vibrate with Atahu or Atyahu. As thoughts arise in the mind, please be aware that the thoughts have come. No need to push them away. Actually, just accept them. But also don't get drawn into them. If you notice yourself getting drawn in, then as soon as you notice, you can simply bring the mind back to the chant, repeating Atahu or Atyahu. Letting go of thoughts as they arise, letting them dissipate as they will. Let's sit together just in silence, just for about 5 minutes. pausing the meditation, bringing right hand to your heart once again, feeling the Aleph in your chest, offering awareness as a gift, as an act of love to the fullness of what is with Lecha. Deep breath in. Lecha. Bringing left hand down to your belly, feeling awareness down into your belly, filling the belly with the light of presence, and then expanding out from your belly, down through your legs, up into your chest, down through your arms, into your face, brain, nervous system, bringing a smile to your lips, feeling the flow of your breathing. Na'ase, deep breath in. Na'ase. To lightly touch your forehead, feeling the space around you and the space within, one seamless, vast field of awareness that you are. Venishma, deep breath in. Venishma. Kissing your fingers, relaxing your hands. Inviting that quality of Aleph to integrate, to become part of us, become part of our inner operating system. So that we might know ourselves as the transcendent awareness, the one space that is able to be in presence with all that happens, all that arises. Ose shalom b'mamav, hu yase shalom aleinu v'yalko Yisrael v'yalko Yishvei Tevel v'yemru Amen. And you can take as long as you want to open your eyes and take a little stretch when you're ready. Before we move on, does anybody have any comments or questions? Or how was that for you?
Certainly know what things in there I'm confronting next.
Oh, okay, that's good. Yeah, it was about, it was maybe a little more than 5 minutes, maybe 7 minutes. Yeah, it's often an unusual, different experience of time when we do meditation. People who are new to it often remark, oh, wow, was it really that long? I was afraid it was going to take so long, and then it was over fast. Sometimes people feel that, maybe not.
So the two lines of the chant, like one is, the first part is surrender and the second one is gratitude.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So to me those are like, you could spend a long time just in surrender and a long time in gratitude.
That's right.
But when you're singing it in a cycle, like mm-hmm. both of them, I don't think I could like go back and forth between surrender and gratitude.
Well, right, so.
I wasn't exactly sure what to do. I wondered how you.
Well, yeah, so if that doesn't feel natural to you to alternate that quickly, then don't just do it much, much more slowly. You could repeat the first part of the chant, for example, over and over again. You could do it that way. You could also just repeat the whole chant, but just focus on the surrender part. I was just kind of offering a way to taste both of them to get a sense of the inner muscle of it. Yeah, but please feel free to do it in whatever way works for you.
Yeah. I noticed myself doing that too. And then one of the things I had said to myself while it's happening is like, I know I feel both of these things. I don't need to switch between them, like actively occupying space in my mind. It's like, I know I'm thankful. I got that. But I can just kind of float.
Mm.
That's what works for me.
Okay. Did anybody else have any feelings about that aspect of it? Okay. All right. Well, shall we dip into bet a little bit before we...
A little bet.
Very nice. A little bet.
Do Hebrew letters have any on paper color associations with them?
Well, in the Sefer Yetzirah they do, which is the book that the attributions come from. So if you get up the bet text page in your device, we'll see the Sefer Yetzirah, bless you. I don't think this, I have to check back my copy of the Sefer Yetzirah. I don't think it gives colors for any of them except for the three mother letters, which are Shin, Mem, and Aleph. I believe it talks about yellow and red and blue for those, like those primary colors. What's that?
Which one's which? I have synesthesia, so I have colors associated.
Yeah, so Aleph is yellow or gold, associated with air. Mem is blue, Shin is red. But you know, now that I'm thinking about it, this is a great question, because as I'm thinking about it, I may have just picked that up just because I know that in other systems, the fire, air, and water are associated that way. It might not actually say that in Sefer Yetzirah. I have to check it now. No. But we can kind of think of the colors in, because we have three mother letters and seven double letters and 12 simple letters. So I believe you can get color palettes that are associated with each of those. They also have planets and astrological symbols and so on. So there are definitely systems out there, though it may not be mentioned in Sefer Yetzirah.
The Sephiroth, which one has a different color?
Yeah, but there's different systems for that too. Like different texts will do it in different ways. And in fact, when you look at the when we look at these attributions for Bet and also for all of the other letters, the Sefer Yetzirah attributions are one version that I picked that made the most sense to me, because there's actually like seven different versions. There's a book by Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, that's a translation of Sefer Yetzirah, and in the appendix in the back, he gives all the different versions. And they all have different, like for one, Bet is Jupiter, for the other one, Bet is the moon, for another one, Bet is, you know, Saturn. So I suggest not to take the attributions so seriously. I give them here just because it's part of the history of Kabbalah with the letters, but the real point is how to actually use the letters as a portal, like what's the kavanah of the letters.
Can I be frank?
Yeah.
It's a game. It's like, in the sense that it's like, it's an exercise and a way to get to certain headspaces.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, that's what I find so beautiful.
Yeah.
There's something so playful with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're all, and all the different symbols all kind of lead into one another, so you can rationalize in your mind how it could be anything, because they're all basically pointing to the same root, just different ways of getting there. So anyway, does anybody want to begin with our bet text? Want to jump in? Well, you can start at the top. It says the body is
the temple of awareness.
Yeah, so that's our basic kavanah. And then, do you want to read the in Hebrew the invocation verse? Can you do that? Good, right. Avarchecha. It's a little hard to pronounce that word. Bechol yom, every day, avarchecha, I will bless you. Va'ahalala, that's like hallelujah, it's the same root there. Shimcha, your name, leolam va'ed, literally means to eternity and on, so forever and ever. Okay, and we come to the next piece. You want to read that?
Bet means house. In Sefer Yetzirah, Bet is one of the seven double letters. It represents the Mida quality of life, the astrological body of the moon, the right eye in the human body, and Sunday in time.
Nice. Okay, does anybody want to read the beginning? This is the opening passage from the Torah, the first five verses. Can anyone read that in Hebrew? Yeah? Anybody?
It's just the beginning of Genesis.
Yeah, are you able to do that?
Yeah, but I think I heard somebody else.
I know, but you haven't done one yet.
I'm reading it on my phone, so
okay.
Pardon my old eyes. Breishit bara Elohim et hashamayim v'yet haaretz.
Nice.
The ha'aretz haita tohu vavohu v'choshech al pnei tohom.
Mm-hmm.
Beruach Elohim merachefet al pnei hamayim.
Such a great word, merachefet al pnei. It's like hovering over the face of the waters. Okay.
Vayomer Elohim yehi or, vayehi or.
Let there be light. There was light.
What's the first word, vayar?
It is vayar, yeah. It's a little hard to see because it has the trope marks in there, too.
Vayar, thank you for not asking me to lane it.
Yeah.
Vayar Elohim et ha'or ki tov vayabdel Elohim bein ha'or vein ha'choshech.
Mm-hmm.
Vayikra Elohim la'or yom la'choshech kara laila vayihi erev vayihi boker yom echad.
Great. Vayikra Elohim la'or yom v'lachoshech kara laila v'yerev v'yvoker or v'yerev v'yvoker yom echad. If we're doing the short weekday reading, then we end that right there. Very good. Okay, who would like to read? We actually want to keep going, read the English.
In the beginning, Elohim created the heavens and earth, and the earth was chaos and emptiness with darkness over the surface of the deep, and a wind of Elohim hovered over the face of the waters. Elohim said, let there be light, and there was light. Elohim saw that the light was good, and Elohim separated the light from the darkness. Elohim called the light day, and the darkness it called night, and there was evening, and there was morning, one day.
Amen. Okay, so letter Bet, of course, is the number two, yeah. So Aleph is one, and yet we saw how the Aleph, the meaning of oneness in the Aleph, really has to do with the embracing of two. It's the coming together of two. Bet is just two, and the fact that Bet, which is symbolic of two, is starting off the Torah as opposed to Aleph, which you might think Aleph should start the Torah. So part of the idea there is that's brought up also in the Ginsburg book, is that there's a contrast between the creation of the world, Bereshit, and the giving of the Torah, which is represented by the giving of the Ten Commandments. And so the first commandment begins Anochi, begins with Aleph, and creation of the word begins Bereshit with Bet. So the idea is that the nature of the experience of being a being, of existence, is dualistic, as we talked about in the very beginning yesterday when we were talking about meditation, is that our basic duality experience is actually not between joy and sorrow, but it's between me and the rest of the reality. That's the basic duality. Me and the rest of it. And that is transcendable through being present, because we relax that sense of me as separate inside the body. And so therefore, that transcendence of duality is the purpose of the spiritual path, which is why the Torah is represented by the Aleph and not the Bet. The giving of the Ten Commandments begins Anochi, which of course means I. And that's the Ikar, that's the essence of the whole thing, is knowing what our real I is. What's the real Anochi? Is it my thoughts and feelings? Obviously, it's not my physical body, but normally that's easy to see. But it's harder to see that it's not our thoughts and feelings either. You know, we can chop off our arm, God forbid, and we don't think, okay, we're not really the same person anymore. We think we're the same person, but we just have this injury, right? Chop off the other arm, you chop off both legs. You can keep going with it as long as you have enough to keep you alive. You're still essentially you. Well, what if your personality changes? What if your opinions change? What if you go from conservative to liberal? Are you gonna be a different person? No, because the essence is the consciousness itself, and the rest of it are garments, the rest of it are forms. So the meaning of...
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people think they are different, though, when they've had a transformation of some sort,
yeah.
Negative or positive.
Yeah. And of course, on a certain level, it's true. Something has changed, but...
it seems like this is a tool for getting past that.
Yeah, because the degree to which we are, we feel ourselves to be any particular thing, right? And the degree to which we disidentify from it, which again is possible through simply being with, through being the consciousness that's with all qualities rather than being asserting our identity as it, which we tend to do unconsciously mostly, then that transcendence is possible. Now, the meaning of bet is house, as it said there. Bet is like bayit. And there's a connection between the bet, the meaning of house, and the creation of the world. And that's what gets drashed out through a little bit of an analysis of the first word of Bereshit. And we're going to jump into that tomorrow. So in this last negative minute that we have, this negative minute with your permission, if we can go for one more minute, let's just chant the Bet invocation verse with the melody that we learned. I taught it to you. It seemed like everybody learned it at the end of the meditation. So it goes like this.
Va'alela shimcha le'olam va'ed becho yom avarecha va'alela shimcha le'olam va'ed becho yom Va'alela shimcha le'olam va'ed becho yom avarecha va'alela shimcha le'olam va'ed.
Amen. You should enjoy the rest of your day, the rest of your evening. Take the Aleph with you. Bet is coming. Beautiful.